Today's episode is sponsored by Tokyo Treat. For those of you who don't know what Tokyo Treat is a monthly pop Japanese snack subscription box. You'll get up to 20 exclusive limited edition and seasonal flavor Japanese snacks, including Japanese instant ramen and drinks that are only available in Japan for a limited time. Now, this month's theme I am pretty excited about, just kind of looking through it pretty quickly. It is Ninja Snack Venture. Adventure into Japan's most elusive and mysterious world of ninjas. This month's Tokyo Treat Box is packed full of sneaky surprises of savory and sweet ninja-inspired treats. Explore the thrilling history and hidden flavors only found in this month's snack box. So we've got some highlights of Kit Kat Chocolate Orange, Spicy Ramen Noodles, Katana Candy Sword, Strawberry Dorayaki, and Gold Nebuta Fresh Apple Juice. All sounds very good. And also, side note, we got a lot of anime shinobi listed here in the booklet, and we got lots of fan favorite characters in here, like Boruto, we got Hell's Paradise, and of course we got Tengen Uzui, the man.
The myth, the legend.
The man, the myth, the legend.
We always enjoy eating this together. This is something that's really fun to do with your friends or your family, and something that makes it really accessible and easy for everyone to be able to enjoy is the fact that it comes with this booklet. I've been working on it. We've all been working on it a little bit. So we know a couple of the things that the Japanese characters say on this box. We know this side says Sugoi. We know that this one says itadakimasu, a couple phrases that we're familiar with, but for those of us who are not entirely fluent, we may not be able to read all of the nutritional facts on every package, and that's where the booklet comes in really handy. There are details about everything that you're going to eat in this box, whether or not it might be suitable for vegetarians or if there's any allergens. So definitely take a look, and like Hannah said, there's also some really fun cultural facts in here as well. Mm-hmm.
All right, but I think we're gonna go ahead and dive in.
I really liked, for the savory option, the wasabi crackers. Those were really delicious, and I'm gonna have to go try to find some that are like that. For a sweet option, I really liked the grape candies, which is a surprise. I don't usually like grape-flavored stuff, but I really liked how chewy they were, and it was a little bit more sour than like that traditional American grape candy flavor, yeah. So it felt more unique.
My favorite savory was the corn puffs, which I guess you could kind of count as sweet. I call it savory, but I almost ate that entire bag. And then my favorite sweet was the pancake with the strawberry. I forget what it's called, but that was really good.
Yeah, I think my favorite was the wasabi chips overall. I think that really took the cake for me. I wanted to say the Kit Kats, but I feel like that's something I've always said, so I'm gonna go with the wasabi chips today.
Thank you so much again to Tokyo Treat for sponsoring today's episode of the Hashira Half Hour. Let's go ahead and jump in. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Hashira Half Hour. We're back with more Chainsaw Man for you this week. We left off on such a cliffhanger last week. I think MAPPA has a thing for cliffhanger shows and violence. And we're certainly not going to disappoint this week with more of that. So we're back. We're ready to talk about episodes 9 and 10.
What's up, everyone? I agree. I think it's an anime thing, leaving episodes on cliffhangers. I feel like I used to watch a lot of network television, and it was the season that would end on a cliffhanger. Well, with anime, it's the opposite. They usually end the episode on a cliffhanger, and then the season kind of ends all nice and, you know, maybe small cliffhangers. Anyway, I'm here. Hello.
Hi, I have arrived. Yeah, honestly, it's been, as Hot Chow Ray once said, it's been a really, really messed up week. And I mean that not for myself, but I mean that for Denji. So, because he's messed up, but we'll talk about that.
Shout out to the Hot Shell Ray reference. There are definitely going to be some listeners that will have no idea. And we're old. So on that note, let's go ahead and we're just going to dive right in because we've got a lot of ground to cover. So Himeno is gone. Aki is injured. Denji's knocked out. And the ghost devil was just eaten by the snake. At least we thought so. Until her hand dances over to Denji and revs his chainsaw. When I saw that, I was like, hell yeah, brother, HH. Here comes Chainsaw Man. But what do you think is, like, with these random, like, antagonists all of a sudden? Like, who are they?
I remember the first time I watched these, like, series of episodes being like, like, SpongeBob caveman, like, not understanding a thing. But also being like so intrigued by what was going on just because I was like floored at the fact that like Himeno, gone, never seen her again. And then all of a sudden, like, the ghost devil, also gone. And so, like, ghosts, seemingly powerful devil, where'd she go? Gone. It's just a very interesting thing that, like, out of nowhere, this twist of events comes, because when you look at other MAPPA shows, you look at, like, Attack on Titan, you know, there's, like, a consistent antagonist, whether that's changing antagonist or not, regardless. There's, like, all of a sudden, the antagonist was the Gun Devil, but, like, these, like, many things just started happening out of nowhere. I didn't know who they were at any point, nor did I have any speculation of who they were, because I was just floored.
I kind of like all the introductions. I think, first of all these people are related, not related, like, blood-related, but just, like, related to the Gun Devil in general. I think they're, like, maybe working for him or something like that, but I always like the shows, and I think most of them tend to follow this route, where we have a lot of, like, minor antagonists, and many times they're more interesting than the main antagonist. Usually the main antagonist is kind of just, like, the big bad that we just gotta kill, while all the other, like, minor ones have, like, the stories and everything. So I think that's a super common thing with anime, and I like that. And I think Chainsaw Man, while we haven't really developed any of these antagonists yet, they're definitely introducing enough to make them interesting. Of course, we'll talk a little bit about what happens later on this episode in a moment, but it seems like at least a few of these people are going to be major players throughout the show. So just to add to the excitement and the intensity of the fight against the Gun Devil, because it's not just a fight against one devil, it's a fight against all the people that work for him too.
100%. It's kind of intimidating the way that it was carried out so quickly, and I wonder if they're going to be important. It's interesting. Again, MAPPA shows kind of have a tendency to devalue human life. I wonder, like, how many of them will be strong players, because we just saw, like, all these people that were at dinner the night before get wiped out, like, immediately. And it's like, okay, I thought maybe we were going to get to know these people, but they're gone. And so who knows if that could be true for, like, the opposite side too. But either way, it seems like they're at least going to put up a strong fight. And even if they do get taken out, like, the Gun Devil probably does have a bunch of henchmen and a bunch of people at his whim that he can, or she, can exercise against their goal. So we'll have to see. But for now, they're here. Denji and Katana Man then begin their combat sequence, which is kind of a strange fight. One that, in theory, they should be fairly evenly matched in, except that some of the extra grunts that are hanging around brought guns to the sword fight, and they hit Denji. As he's, like, stunned by this, Katana Man then slices him and one of the supporting cast in half, which is not great, because that means that now they've got Denji.
God, this fight scene was really interesting, because I did think it was going to be a little bit more well-matched. However, I do feel like Katana Man definitely has a lot more experience than Denji. I think Denji is still so new at this, he just kind of lets loose. He was also, like, super, like, he was out, because he got shot in the head, and, it, like, the ghost devil had to, like, hey, yo, come on! So I think he really struggled in this fight, because I think it was a fight that should be well-matched. But maybe in the future it will be, once Denji gets some experience. That being said, it definitely doesn't look good. I think it also really says a lot for what these people are willing to do when Katana Man just took out the guy that Denji was holding on to. Because I think Denji, if I'm remembering correctly, was trying to use that guy for leverage to, like, get away. Because he was, like, trying to hold him hostage. And Katana Man was just like, all right, well, then you're both going down. And the guy he was holding just died because he's not... in the situation that they are in. And I was like, okay, that's what they'll do. It kind of reminded me, first Demon Slayer reference, of Muzan. Muzan's willing to just, like, take out any of his subordinates if they're just not doing what if they're not doing what he wants them to do. So kind of scary when the foe is willing to take out their own people to take out you.
Just a controversial opinion. All the upper moons are more interesting than Muzan. Fight me if you will on that. I will say this fight scene was awesome. And not because I like Denji being cut in half, but again, like, it's just so well done in the sense that there's such fluidity to the fights. The fight choreo is just so beautiful. Also, Denji always, it's so unhinged, but he's like, every time he gets hurt, he's like, yow! And it's just so silly. He's, like, not taking it seriously, even though he's, like, kind of at, like, peril and, like, deep risk right now. So it's always interesting just to see how, like, the lack of experience that Hannah kind of mentioned really, like shows, but also is kind of what makes him interesting and makes him like powerful, is that like he doesn't have the experience to be like afraid enough, so he doesn't give a shit.
That's fair. He is such a goober, and it's like so out of place in this show, which we love to see, and we're gonna see more of it. We love Chainsaw Man. We're not gonna see it right now because we have to pan away and come back to one of the eeriest cliffhangers in the show, if you ask me, which is this scene on the train with Makima. So when we left off, we saw that she had been shot point blank, no coming back from that. And then the grunts that were responsible for shooting up the train turn their backs on her for a moment. And when they turn around, she's standing up, like, staring at them. And this freaked me out so bad the first time. I think it's still creepy the second time. I just really, really did not care for this.
Yeah, this was definitely a scene to be watched. And it's, like, another moment where, like, I couldn't take my eyes off the screen, which I think is really great that Chainsaw Man is able to do that, like create so many different moments that have different effects, and it's not just the fight scenes that like glue you to the television, right? So this scene specifically, I had so many questions because I was like, there's no way anyone stands up to that. How are you doing that? There's something wrong with you. I knew there was something wrong with you from the start, but now the evidence is stacking. So I was very suspicious of Makima. And also, like, kind of going forward a little bit, everything, like, all the guys that were standing there have holes in the middle of their chests. She doesn't have any weapons. It would just show us. And there's holes all up in their chest. And then she, like, walks off the train, and she's like, oh, this isn't my blood. Don't worry about it. And it's just, like, the way she's too calm about all of this is too much.
I mean, I think we've mentioned how creepy Makima is in every single episode and how just, like, manipulative she is. And I think while I'm sitting here as not a manga reader, I have no idea how she managed this, because obviously in the previous episode, it was clear that she was shot in the head. But now she's like, oh, it's not even my own blood. I don't know what that means. I don't know what her power is and how she can managed to get out of that, but it was very creepy. And Makima is interesting because Makima seems to, from the very beginning, walk this gray line in between we want to cheer for her, but she could also be a villain. And I'm almost starting to lean towards, I'm like, is she like the main villain? I feel like there's going to be this like big reveal, and it's like, gun devil, shmun devil. It's Makima. She's the one we have to actually fight. And who knows, that could be because, like, Attack on Titan. Like, we were cheering for Eren the entire time, and all of a sudden we're like, wait, are we supposed to be, like, cheering against him now? Like, what's going on? So, it's creepy. I don't like it. I don't like how calm she is. It's like she was expecting it to happen, and she was just like, okay, I need to change her clothes now. That's fine. Whatever. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, I don't trust her. I don't trust her, and I haven't since episode one. And I am also not a manga reader yet. I probably am going to pick it up after this second rewatch because I want to know what's going to happen. And I don't want to get spoiled because it seems like whatever is being built up to is going to be really interesting. So definitely keeping an eye on her. Then we learn after Makima gets off the train that most of the special divisions have been completely eliminated in this ambush, and that everybody remaining is going to report directly to Makima. She speculates that the Gun Devil likely has something to do with this ambush. What do you guys think?
I mean, just to kind of piggyback off of what I just said, I think, I don't know if she somehow can see the future in some way. Like, maybe something has to do with her eyes and how she does that. I mean, obviously we'll talk about what the display of power that we see in a moment here, but I feel like she just knew this was going to happen, you know, like just how calm she is and how she's just saying like, oh yeah, the Gun Devil's probably behind this. They're like, everyone's reporting to you. She's like, okay. Like, I don't know. I feel like she knows what's going on, and it could be because she can see the future or she's actually working with the Gun Devil or whatnot. I'm very interested to see what's going on with her because I think they're making it very clear in the way the story is written that we shouldn't necessarily yet be like cheering for her. Like, something's going on here where it's like, what is happening? Can she see the future? Is she working with someone who can? I don't know.
Well, there are all sorts of devils, and we don't know her contract yet. If you ever read the manga, and for anyone who reads the manga, and they also reference it that no one knows her contract, so we don't know. You never know, actually. What I would say about this is that, because I don't even know as a manga reader, what she knew about this. They don't ever explain that. So I can only speculate that she is just smart enough to figure it out. But that's kind of all I've got. Is that, like, she is just very smart and calculated, and whatever these antagonists are that have come up, she had to have seen it coming because of the fact that they've been collecting pieces of the Gun Devil is my best bet.
I don't know if it negates the fact that she could be a villain, that, like, there is still the Gun Devil to reckon with, and that it's, like, two separate forces, and... you know, to an extent, this Gun Devil's like, don't encroach on my turf, like whatever you have going on, Makima, that they would want to try to throw the scent off of their trail. I do think that we're still going to have to reckon with this Gun Devil, and whether or not they're in cahoots remains to be seen, but it doesn't seem that way right now. Even if Makima presents a challenge of her own, I think that there are probably two fights to be had, at least, in my opinion. But we're going to have to see. I'm not sure. And that's kind of exciting. For now, we have to focus on what's going on presently and, like, this ambush that just occurred, and Makima is still in charge. So she orders several convicts to be brought to a remote temple where they are blindfolded and are seated in two even lines. And then we cut back to Katana Man and his subordinates trying to get Denji away from the scene. But one of the men who's holding Denji, trying to get him into the getaway van, hesitates, sees a crow, which is kind of ominous, and then he literally explodes. What the fuck?
Can't. I don't know how much I can say, because I don't want to say anything, but the scene is just, like, broken. Like, the scene was grotesque. I did not like it. I'm a huge Junji Ito fan, as everyone knows, if you listen for a while, and just Emily and Hannah. But, yeah, even this sort of, like, body horror got to me a little bit, because I was like, how is she doing that? My first watch through, I was like, yo, what? And also the hand signs, she's doing, like, a domain expansion, like, something's going on here. I was just like, I don't know what's happening. Is she in her inner Vogue right now? What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Little old me over here, who used to not be able to do gore at all. I don't even know how to word how I felt about this scene, because it was kind of crazy. I still don't understand her power at all, and I feel like there's more to it than what she showed here. And like we talked about, you know, obviously we don't know what her contract is and that sort of thing, so it's kind of hard to say. But I will say, at least... This might sound bad, but she did ask the assistant or whoever was with her, I can't remember who they were. She was like, well, get, you know, people who are on death row for me and bring them to the temple. I was like, okay, you know, at least she's using them. I don't know. That just kind of struck me for some reason. I think I missed that the first time I watched it, that she asked for that. So then, like, when I watched it this time, I was like, at least, like, maybe there's some, you know, she's just not using random people. But that being said, the explosion and the way that it seemed like these people could feel it before it actually happened, because they were like, something's not right here, like something's going on, and then they explode. I was like, so what do they feel? Like, that's creepy, man.
I still don't fully know what to make of this, but I want to take a couple minutes to dive into it, because obviously this is her ability, and it seems like the order of things that have to be done is interesting. Like, she has to have these bodies present, essentially, these convicts. She gives them the instructions that they have to speak a name out loud. And then she makes those distinct, like, domain expansion style hand motions as though she is, like, crushing something. And what also struck me about this scene is the fact that even the other members of the special division are blindfolded. And so we learn that they actually don't even have the clearance to know what contracts she has made and with which devils. So, even though we don't know yet, I think it might be fun to speculate for a minute. What do you think the contractor ability is? Because it's horrifying.
The shoe devil they step on. Just like a giant shoe just squishes them. That's the best I can come up with.
The shoe devil.
Hey, it shouldn't be freaky, but if it's big enough.
That's true.
You know, if it's like in the situation where we're bugs and the shoe
the human, you know?
If the boot fits.
That's the best I can come up with.
So I can't really say much because I know exactly everything on this part, but I will give you my first watch through speculations. I thought it was the pressure devil. Because, and I've always thought, like, about the universe of Chainsaw Man, how, like, it's one thing to be afraid of, like, a physical tangible object, but when you're afraid of a concept, it almost becomes scarier because it means so many different things, right? You could think of pressure as in, like, the social pressure. You could think of it as peer pressure. You could think of it as, like, physical pressure of atoms and molecules. So I thought that it was, like, pressure devil, and that she was using pressure in a way to compress or to push outward people's bodies and kind of explode them that way. So that's kind of what my first initial thoughts were.
What if it's the balloon devil?
The balloon devil. Oh my god.
Pop. I mean, they did, like, pop. So it's like she's got the balloon, she pops it, and it pops them. And they just...
True.
I definitely think that the pressure devil is a good guess. There's got to be some element of that there because of the way that it happens, but my initial thought is that it's somehow, like, it's not the curse devil, because we know that Aki's already got that going on, but, like, a voodoo devil, if that makes sense, because she has to have, like, a doll of sorts, like these convicts, like somebody, like, she can't do it, or maybe if she did, something would happen to her, so she knows she has to do it, like, indirectly. Somebody else has to say it. Somebody else's body is in front of her, but then it's happening elsewhere to, like, these other things. And seeing the crow and, like, that feeling of, like, eeriness that happens for them, like, right before they explode, made me wonder, like, if somebody had, like, a voodoo type curse on them and they feel, like, that chill of, like, somebody wishing them evil and bad things. But I don't know if that's specific enough. That's my first thought, but I'm not sure if it's specific enough to, like, exactly how it happens for them. So I'm curious to find out, but that's my guess. We'll see. I'm going to have to read and find out, but it's creepy. Do not care for it.
Hello again. We are here in person, live from the Actors Studio due to technical difficulties. So thank you for your patience. We want to bring you the end of Chainsaw Man 9 and 10. So we're going to jump back on in. So we left off with an unexpected hero arriving to the scene. We have Kobeni, knife in hand, and we see her move through this like an absolute beast.
What does she have? A knife!
No!
Exactly. I didn't know if I was watching Kobeni or if I was watching Toji Fushiguro. This was wild to see, and I think that Mappa does characters that have just plain old swords or whatever in their hands really well. This was super amazing, and also super, like, cool to see Kobeni kind of take a step up, because, like, last week I called her a little bitch, but this week she stepped up. She stepped up to the plate for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think she definitely follows a similar idea to Zenitsu. I think that she's very scared of things, very realistic, just like what I would do, but usually, you know, or in this case, she had something to kind of set her off and turn her into a complete badass. And it was a really good scene. I like how she was able to surprise the bad guys, and they were like, what? Like, also that the guy protected her when the old lady tried to shoot her, and then she just, like, quickly took her out with the gun. I was like, oh damn, she's skilled.
She definitely surprised me, but we did talk about this last time, that she's, like, the Zenitsu character.
Yeah.
She's on the team for a reason, even if she seems like an absolute coward. Like, she has this ability, and she is so fast. She's, even though she's not somebody that's got a contract with the devil yet, or, like, has devil abilities the way Denji does, it seems like she's able to move on a similar level.
Very fast.
Yeah. Like, a lot of dexterity. And maybe it's that she's, like, finally so panicked, kind of like Zenitsu, that she almost, like, disassociates and becomes this alter ego of herself. But it's really cool to watch, and she kicks some ass in this scene. So happy to see her stepping up to the plate. And that is pretty much where we close out the episode, except that we pan back to Makima and some of the representatives from the special divisions, and we're left with an unanswered question to close the episode. This guy asks Makima, how much of this ambush did you anticipate? What do you guys think?
Well, first of all, he asked this right after handing in his resignation, which is very realistic, you know? And her answer to that was exactly what I was expecting. It was probably one of the first times that I knew exactly what she was going to say the first time I watched it. And she was like, I don't share that information with non-employees, or however she worded it, which was like, that tells me she has something to hide. Like, I keep saying it, and I might be like way out of line thinking that she could be a straight up villain, but like, she is hiding something. And I think she did anticipate a lot of this and is choosing to lose a bunch of people rather than step in earlier. Because I think, honestly, in my opinion as of right now, I feel like Makima really just wants Denji to be alive. Everyone else is kind of expendable to her, in my opinion. So she doesn't really care.
Yeah, I think she saw this coming and maybe is using this moment as leverage for something else greater in the long run. When I first watched it, obviously I know what comes next, so I won't speak on that. But looking at it, I know that there's a lot of different aspects to this moment specifically that affect kind of the next set of the storylines here.
It's interesting. I'm curious to find out more, but it's interesting that this side character that we're never going to see again picked up on it too. So maybe she's not as slick as she thinks that she is. I don't know. Either that, or the people that make up these special divisions are highly intelligent. Interested to see the answer. Cool. All right. Now, before we transition into episode 10, we get our ending sequence break, and we get an MA song, which is really fun, and one that is on my weeb shit playlist that I play all the time, and I had forgotten where it was from, because the last time I watched this was probably over a year ago, and it was the first time, so I was like, oh yeah, you know, I can bop along to this song in the car, but I had forgotten that it was from Chainsaw Man, so it was a nice surprise to see it again.
Yeah, this closing credit for episode 9 was really awesome. I like that they only used the black and white and the red as the other color there. That was really cool. I think that was really interesting that they focused on the color red. Makima's hair is red, Makima's eyes are red, and also there's just a lot of blood in that episode, so a lot of different like interpretations of what the red could mean for the episode overall as a theme.
I did not skip this one because I knew the moment I heard her voice singing, I was like, that's MA. I can definitely tell she has a very unique voice, though. And if you listen to her songs you listen to her songs enough times, it's the kind of voice you can usually call out. But just like what Brian said, the black and white with just red being the color was really an interesting choice with how much blood was in this episode. I thought it kind of just went along with how gory this episode was, and MA's voice is just so smooth and buttery that you're just like...
just vibing.
Just vibing to blood.
As we do with most of the shows that we like. And on that note, we move into episode 10. We see Aki wake up in a hospital bed. Denji and Power are up to their usual antics here before leaving Aki alone. And then we see him ask the Curse Devil how much time he has left. The Curse Devil answers that he has 2 years. After hearing this, he goes to light up a cigarette using the lighter that Himeno gave him, and he starts to cry, which is very sad. I think there's a lot to unpack here. One thing right off the rip that was really interesting to me about this scene was the parallels and the differences between the apples in this scene versus Denji's, because when Denji was in the hospital, Aki sat beside him peeling the apples for him, even if they didn't get along, so that he could eat it. In this scene where Aki's the one in the hospital bed, Denji and Power are eating his apples for him, and they leave one behind unpeeled for him to decide what to do with. So it speaks, I think, a bit to the quality of their characters and just the way that they think about others in the world, but it wasn't lost on me. That's a small moment. Like I said, I think there's a lot to unpack here.
Oh yeah, it's a very big scene with a lot of information that, you know, they hand to us. I did find it interesting. I noticed that moment when Denji was like, here, have an apple, and I was like, he literally peeled them for you when you were in the hospital. Like, show him some respect. But I think that it is just kind of showing of their characters, because Denji, I think, just doesn't know enough about the world yet to care truly about other people that much. And Power, of course, is a fiend. So, I don't know why I said
fiend.
Fiend. That being said, 2 years, that's not much time. Mm-mm. And we've kind of been talking about it, and like how Himeno was like, no, don't use it. So I wonder if maybe she knew, mm-hmm. like he had told her, but it also makes me wonder how many years got used up in the last use in that battle. So I don't know how that works. I don't know if there's like a certain amount each count, however, you know, that double worked, but definitely interesting. And it also calls back to the story of him and Himeno meeting and him being like, I'm not going to smoke because it'll, you know,
rot your bones.
Yeah, it'll rot your bones. And he's like, well, I've got 2 years left, so I might as well enjoy something, which is like, you can't blame him, really.
Yeah.
If you know you only have 2 years left, why not do things that are not good for your health? Because you don't have a choice, really.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't like seeing Aki so sad. I mean, he is the sad boy of the group, so like it made sense, but also it was like, Dad's crying. Why is Dad crying? And it was really upsetting for me just because like he lost someone so like close to him, and he realized like as soon as he went to smoke a cigarette, like that how he was reminded of that person. And so that was really hard to watch. Just kind of like seeing him go through his own emotional like pain and experiencing that all over again. I think he kind of forgot for a second that Himeno was dead, and then he had to like reprocess that. So that's definitely very difficult for someone to do. With the apples, Power makes me laugh in the most like important moments when you're not supposed to be laughing, because she's just like, relinquish the apple to me! And I'm like, you need to stop. He's literally about to cry, and you need to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just, like, really unaware of their surroundings, I think. For an ounce that Denji maybe has some kind of social awareness, Power has absolutely zero.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that. The other thing, of course, here is that we do see Aki cry, and that's where Himeno left us as well, was saying, like, if I die first, then you'll be here to cry for me. Which we do see play out, and it sucks. So, very, very sad. We love Aki. Also not happy to know that he only has 2 years as of right now, but maybe we can have hope, right? Usually is okay to have hope for MAPPA characters, right? Anyway, so Denji goes back. He left his manga in the room, and he ends up not going in because he sees Aki crying, and so he recognizes the pain that's being experienced by his comrades around him. And he begins to wonder if he would feel sad if anybody around him died. He didn't cry for Himeno, and he doesn't feel much for any of the others. He's like, I don't think I'd cry for Aki, even Makima. I would probably be out of it for a couple of days, and then I'd be fine, because my basic needs are being met now, which is pretty awesome. And he is left with that thought. Does this make him a bad person?
No. I don't think it makes him a bad person. I think it's just the way he's grown up, and that's his experience. I think it's more so that he's never had someone super close to him. The closest thing he kind of talks about this, is that the closest thing he's had is Pochita, which is when he was really super sad about. But, like, Pochita still lives on within him, so I think that there's still some, like, hope there. So I think that that's really interesting that he, like, talks about how he wouldn't really cry for anyone else. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
I don't think it makes him a bad person. It's kind of like I just touched on. I think he's grown up such a different way with, you know, kind of being away from people, and the people that he did know and trusted turned on him and killed him, essentially. So I think that when you grow up in the way that he did, you can be very desensitized to emotions and grief towards people, because you just don't have that emotional range. And I think Denji just doesn't really have that yet. I think that he is a, you know, he has the attention span and the emotional range of about a 3-year-old, because of just the way he grew up. And a 3-year-old, if someone died, they wouldn't really know, you know. They would just more be like, hey, where'd that person go? Okay, like, too bad, you know. So it's just that he has to grow into being able to feel that way, and I think it can happen for him. I think he just has a little ways to go before he gets there.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I'm gonna flip it a little bit and say that on that note, I do think he's a bad person, because he doesn't know how to be a good one yet.
Yeah.
He's had, like, no nature, no nurture, and everything that has been displayed to him has been, like, the absolute worst that humanity has to offer, so I do think he leans into those tendencies. Like, if I knew Denji, I probably would not really want to be around him that much, because he's... like, just, like, the worst. Like, he's, like, the worst teenage boy. Is he evil? No. I don't think he's evil. Do I think he's a good person? Not yet. I think he's got a lot to learn. So
yeah,
hopefully we'll see that play out, or maybe not. Maybe the show will continue to spin things that we expect and he will just be selfish the whole time. And that does make him interesting, if it doesn't make him good.
Denji's got a lot to learn before he can save anyone. But I believe Denji can save the world. Yep.
Chainsaw Man. All right. Well, whether or not he's a good or bad person, he is alive. He's one of the few that makes it out of this ambush. And so Makima takes Denji and Power to meet Kishibe, who we love. We get to hear Nanami's voice actor once again. What a beautiful voice this guy has.
Yeah.
And they meet in the graveyard that we've seen Himeno and Aki in before. He asks the two of them where their loyalties lie, essentially. And they answer, it's with the side that's winning. Which is kind of fun, but you'd think that he wouldn't like that. He does actually like it a lot. And then he says that he will be their sensei because that's what he wants to be called. And then he strangles both of them, breaking their necks.
What a guy. I mean, we've seen him a few times talking to Himeno in flashbacks, right? And each time he's been talking about how you have to be crazy to be in this job. Anyone who's not crazy, anyone who's like a good standing citizen that just wants the best for people, don't make it in this job. So I think the test that he had, like, they answered those questions not like normal people would, you know? There were three, I don't remember the first two, but they were very like, nah, I'm good. Like, oh, are you sad that people died? Not really. Like, that is exactly what I would expect this man to want because of how many times we've seen him in flashbacks talking about how crazy people need to be for this job. So, and then he turns out to be crazy himself because he's like, ah, we think he's like hugging them. Like, you're such good kids. Ah, I like being called sensei. Dead.
Yeah, the thing about this is that Kishibe is really, I think, redefining what it means to have screws loose. I think that, you know, we talked about how Denji fought for 3 days against the Eternity Devil, and there were the flashbacks with Himeno talking about, you know, if you want to be a devil hunter, you have to have some screws loose. I think he really flips that on his head because he's a human, right? He is not a devil, not a fiend, but he is someone who has, like, no sense of, like, danger on that part. Like, he completely goes after it and strangles them, and he's like, hunting starts now. Like, these exercises, I'm going to train you, well, we're starting right now. And I think that's kind of the person you need in charge of the two of them, because, like, Aki's great, don't get me wrong, but Kishibe is the one who's going to take him out back and whip him into shape, and you can't deny that.
I don't think Aki knows exactly what to do with them.
Probably not. I like the take him out back euphemism. He's going to take him out back like old Yeller right now.
Literally. Apparently, like, later on in the episode, Power's like, yeah, you died about 20 times today.
That's rough, buddy.
Yeah.
Literally.
It's a bad day.
Ooh.
It's a bad day. He gives them a little bit of blood, and after reviving them, he says that Makima asked him to train the two of them because the Gun Devil is after Denji. He says that he's going to train them by hunting them until they are strong enough to hunt and beat him. Then he kills them again. Seems like this is going to be an interesting training session, montage, what have you.
Yeah. Honestly, as a training arc, this is so interesting for many, many reasons. I love the fact that, you know, it's so different from every other training arc. Naruto training arcs, they're, like, so, like, serious and regimented. This, there's, like, high stakes, because he's like, he admits that he knows that Power is not fully immortal, so the fact that she possibly could die in this training is very real. Where, like, yeah, Tanjiro could have died during his training arc in the very first season, but also Rokudaki was there to make sure, like, that didn't happen, so that was part of, like, the plan essentially. But the rest of it is like, Denji is dying, oh, here's some type O, here you go, buddo.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely get a lot of training arcs in anime, but none quite like this, where it literally is not just, like, life or death for them, but literally he is killing him over and over and over again. Like, he is straight up dying and then being revived because he's immortal. And that's interesting, because usually when you think of someone who's immortal, you don't think about someone that can die and be revived. You just think of someone that can't die. So it's like,
how tiring and how would that feel to just be constantly killed and then revived? Like, imagine how it feels to, I guess, like, I haven't ever experienced, like, going into surgery and going under. Like, imagine, I would imagine it would feel like that just, like, over and over again, but yeah. Worse.
And then in between each one, you have to try and fight for your life.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's
one way to do it.
It's one way to whip them into shape real quick. All right, so on that note, we cut away from the village idiots for the time being. We'll come back to them later. But we have to cut back to Aki now, who, in his recovery, is realizing that he can't summon the Fox Devil right now. And there are some other devil hunters in the room with him that say he abused its power and now he's on its bad side. They also know somehow how much time he has left with the cursed devil. So knowing that, they suggest that he retire, but he refuses, saying that the devil who killed his family is still out there, and they're like, if you're gonna stay in this role, you're gonna need to make a contract with a stronger devil.
What the fuck?
My man has no time left. This is like stressing me out, guys. So there's that to unpack, but then a mystery woman appears. We find out who it is later, but in this moment, who did you think that it was?
All right, so first question. Something I found interesting was he didn't just say the devil who killed his family is out. He's now added Himeno to that. So mm-hmm. Now he has, like, a desire for revenge even more against the Gun Devil because he knows that the Gun Devil's behind these attacks that just happened. So I found that interesting just to show how much he cared about Himeno. Were they in love? Maybe. Who knows? But, I mean, we know she liked him. Yeah. Did he like her? It's possible.
He at least cared for her.
He at least cared for her, yeah. And sometimes that can start out as just like being, you know, you care for someone and then eventually you grow to have a romantic love for them, which they didn't really have time for that. But, I mean, he has a screw loose. But also at the same time, if we know he only has 2 years left, he's thinking if he were to die in a year, like, it's not like it's cutting his life that much shorter than it already is. I think he's kind of in this position where he at least wants to die trying to fight the Gun Devil, which I don't, like... It's very heroic, and I would say, like, if I were in his shoes, I'd probably be like, yeah, I'm gonna go live on a freaking island for the next 2 years and live the rest of my life in peace. But it also makes sense that he would say that. Also, random shout out, the guy of this, like, girl-guy duo, he's voiced by Kengo Konishi. Muichiro. Hmm. So that's fun. Anyway, the mystery woman, my first thought was Himeno, that she somehow, like... wasn't actually dead, because all we saw was her body, like, disintegrate rather than actually, like, a dead body. I was wrong. But that was the first thought.
I remember when I first watched this, I didn't know who Mystery Woman was. I was like, International Woman of Mystery. Here it is. So I was, like, very confused. Making a contract with a stronger devil, though? How much stronger are we gonna get here, folks? Like, the power scaling, like, foxes, right? Like, the Fox Devil was huge. Like, bigger than the Snake Devil, it seemed, and the Fox Devil was able to eat up whatever. And so, I don't know if he just overused his contract with the Fox Devil. They honestly don't explain it in the manga, so it's really up to speculation here.
Is there no more Conan? Is she done?
Unfortunately, yeah. Aww. There's no more Conan.
Why is that so short-lived? That was so badass!
Aww, not Hannah about to cry.
Aww, no more Conan! Okay,
yeah.
Cone lives on in my heart.
Aki here has a lot of ambition to try and go ahead and continue fighting. So I think it's just really interesting that he's still willing to go through with this, knowing kind of the costs that are being paid, but we'll see what happens.
When I first saw this, somehow I was like, and I'm like, I know that there's no way his family's alive, but for some reason I thought maybe it was his mom surprising him. That's, and like, somehow thought, yeah. some relative in some way. Because of the dark hair, I know. Very, well, very obvious. Not like, they literally live in Japan.
Or like 90% of anime characters.
Have dark hair. But it was also the look on his face. Like, he seemed really, like, he knew who it was. And he seemed surprised by it. So that was my thought. Obviously, the likelihood of that being true is very slim. I'm also nervous about this contract with a stronger devil because... I feel like we've already seen some decently strong devils, so, like, how much higher up are we going to keep going, yeah. Like we've discussed? If, like, we imagine that poor little baddie is, like, at the bottom of the totem pole and then Gun Devil somewhere at the top, like, how high are we going? And how will that work? And will it be enough to help him fight Gun Devil the way that he wants to? We'll have to
find out more. Again, this show's doing a really good job of setting up a lot of stuff that we'll hopefully get to see pay off later. But now we're cutting back to our village idiots. We see Power and Denji, and they are waking up after all these murder attempts on their life. Power basically kills Denji again, trying to wake him up, and between this and, like, the kind of transition sequence that happens, they agree, for once, that they need to figure out how to kick Kishibe's ass. But he easily dodges their attacks, including this ambush that they plan on him at the apartment building that they're living in. This scene is almost comic in a really dark way. They're gonna have to improve a lot to fight against Kishibe.
Yeah, this was super cool. I loved this scene so much because there was so much to it. There was like, wow, the village idiots have finally thought something out. Like, they had multiple avenues. There were blood spears. There were blood spikes. Like, and then there was Denji jumping down. Like, there's a lot going on, but it still all felt very cohesive, which is something that we don't expect from these two characters who come off as very, like, dimwit almost. So it's very interesting to watch them kind of fight and to watch the way that they, like, were pushed into a corner. And he even kind of says that, like, oh, like, when prey is pushed into a corner, they try and hunt you. And so that's really cool that they were able to do that. Successful? No, they got their asses beat still, but hey, worth a shot, A for effort.
I thought it was hilarious that they put glasses on to show how smart they were. Like, they went full nerd. It was like, okay, because they're like, we're going to be smart. And it was a pretty well thought out plan. It would have gotten anyone who wasn't as good as Kishibe was. So I would like to say that seeing him in action like that was really cool, though, because we haven't gotten to see him do a lot yet. But getting him to see him, like, getting to see him dodge, I was like, dang, okay, all right. He's very good at defensive and offensive. But also, when he, like, got Denji and then told Denji, like, I'm going to go get a drink that was good enough for, like, today. And they were like, yay. And then he freaking threw the knife into Denji's head. I was like, oh. That's rough, buddy.
It was not a close fight. Not enough. No matter how much they prepared for it, they've got a long way to go before they're even close, because he can read them like a book.
It was a step in the right direction.
It was a step.
I think he was actually proud of them. They just aren't good enough to beat him yet.
No, not even close. They have taken one step up the mountain that they will need to summit. So we will see. But now we reach the close of this episode, and in it we are seeing Aki being literally led down a dark path. He's asked who the woman was, and we learn that she was actually Himeno's sister, and that she gave him a letter sharing how Himeno was trying to get him to quit devil hunting, which is kind of rough. In spite of that, obviously, he's here. He's looking to make this contract with a stronger devil, like we've discussed, and we learn that this is going to be a contract with the future devil, which sounds pretty horrific, to be honest. As much as the Infinity Devil, or like the Eternity Devil, was spooky, there's something about the Future Devil that's also scary. And these devil hunters that are going with him say hunters who have made a contract with this devil have paid really high prices. So for example, we hear somebody gave half their lifespan for a contract with this devil. Somebody gave an eye. What do you think that Aki will have to give him?
Well, he doesn't really have much of a lifespan to give.
Ay-yi-yi. I can never have anything I want.
I'm sorry. This is how I cope with things, all right? But he doesn't. So I could see him giving a hand, literally, like a physical hand. I could see him giving any limb. I could see him giving anything but his lifespan, because that's just not much for the Future Devil. The Future Devil is really interesting, because I had this theory with Makima that she was the Future Devil. I was wrong. But, you know, sometimes I say really wild theories and only about 1 out of 20 is actually correct. But it was really interesting. The letter from Himeno was really tough to read. I think just her sister giving that to him, showing that Himeno was like telling her family about Aki and hoping that he would retire and trying to get him there. That's gonna be really tough for Aki, because he's still standing there alive and now she's gone, and it's really because he like refused to quit.
Yeah.
But revenge can blind someone so much that it can cause you to lose other people. And maybe as hard as it is to lose Himeno, maybe this is something that Aki really needs to learn. And maybe eventually he'll get to the point where he can possibly rely on others to help with his revenge and take maybe a year to himself to just relax. But I doubt that.
Yeah.
But I think the letter from Himeno, at least seeing that, would probably have helped him a little bit. He definitely seemed a little bit more, like, a little bit different by this scene.
Yeah.
The future devil. A power scale, if you will, right? We just talked about power scaling. Like, kind of earlier in the episode, I mentioned, like, conceptual devils being more terrifying because of, like, what they really present. Like, a tangible object, sure, you can be afraid of, like, a knife, or you can be afraid of a chainsaw, but, like, being afraid of the future has so many different facets to it. So there's obviously, like, this is a strong devil because of not only that, but of the consequences you have to, like, face to actually, like, pay the price to get the contract. So there's a lot to it. I honestly, when I first saw this, I don't know what I thought he was going to have to give. I thought it was going to be a lot, though. I honestly thought, even knowing the two-year thing, I thought he was going to also have to give half of his lifespan, just because it's a future devil and want time, right? With the letter was crushing, dude. That was so sad. I was like, no, they had, like, unrequited love. Mm. They were so close.
They really have a way of ripping our hearts right out of our chests, for sure. I'm not sure what Aki's going to have to give. I'm really interested to see what will happen in the next episode. I agree, there's not enough of his lifespan, I think, for it to be enticing enough for this devil. And I'm, like, trying to think of, like, would this devil want what's most important to him? And at this point, the only thing I could think of is, like, his dream to take down this gun devil. Like, is he going to have to give up some facet of that to make it possible for it to happen?
Yeah.
Even if he's not the one to do it. That's my thought. Like, something that's really, really important to him, but we're gonna have to see in next week's episode. So, on that note, let's go ahead and move into ending sequence 2. How do you guys like this one?
Oh, I hated this one. I hated the ending sequence so much. I hated, like, the half-realist, like, thermal imaging kind of thing going on. It was very, like, I don't know why, I just did not like the choices, the color themes. It was all off for me. It was all felt very wrong. I don't usually say that about, like, things like that, but it just was not for me.
Yeah, I think it was definitely trying to show just how do I put it, like, chaotic things are in the show right now. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, because I knew I needed to watch it. I watched, like, half of it, and I had to, like, look down because I didn't very much enjoy it either.
No, it was definitely, like, off-putting. But the song was interesting too, like the quality of the singer's voice.
Oh yeah, the song was great.
Like the song was really good and, like, well chosen, and it did feel like the sequence was kind of well suited to what it immediately followed, but definitely unsettling. So, continued bangers as far as relevance to the episodes. I still think this is so cool. But, well, then I will go first with my favorite moments. I really liked how episode 10 just ended with this setup for the future devil. It, like, is probably one of my favorite parts after what happened with the Infinity Devil and the setup for that in the hotel. There's something really ominous about this, and it's a really interesting cliffhanger to leave us on again. And, like, this genuine sense of, like, I do not know what is going to happen right now. And that's also the future. So it's like, are we almost, like, feeding into that a little bit ourselves as the audience?
Yeah.
Of, like, this anxiety and, like, building up whatever this devil's gonna be. I think that any use of this, like, foreshadowing and tension is really, really well done in this story. So that, I think, was my favorite.
I think my favorite was Denji and Power's attack on I just really liked, like, the action sequence of that and just everything about it, like, the comedic glasses down to the way he ended by throwing the knife in Denji's head after he, like, told him that they weren't gonna do anything, and then he was like, don't ever listen, like, or however he worded it. I just thought that whole scene was really, really well done. Just, like, the animation, the action, everything was...
It's a lot of good moments to choose from. I will give an honorary mention because my favorite moment was also the ending of episode 10, and I like it for a little bit of a different reason, not just because it's, like, ominous and spooky, but it's also because, like, Aki is showing somewhat of a determination here. So he's, like, really invested in trying to beat the gun devil, and I think, like, he's willing to pay whatever the cost is going to be to actually, like, be the Gun Devil and make this contract with the Future Devil. Like, regardless of what it actually is, he almost seems to not feed into the Future Devil's problems. Like, that kind of, like, convoluted cycle of feeding the power into it. I'll also mention the Makima scene on the train. Like, that was wild.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that probably, like, rattled a lot of people the first time they saw it. So I think that was really cool that we also got to see that.
That was a good moment, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of good moments in almost every episode of the show so far, but especially the last four, I think, have, like, really upped the ante.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll continue through the last two of the season, which will be our next episode. On that note, though, that is all the time that we have for this week. So we hope that you enjoyed and that you'll come back next week. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell on YouTube. Give us a download of the podcast, and you can follow us on Spotify. If you enjoyed what you've heard, we'd always appreciate an honest rating and let us know your thoughts. And you can also give us a follow on TikTok and Instagram at Hashira Half Hour. We are on X as well at Hashira Half. Thank you so much again to Tokyo Treat for sponsoring today's episode of the Hashira Half Hour. If you're interested in getting your own Tokyo Treat box, check out the link in the description below. You can get $5 off with code Hashira. We will see you next week. Kon!
Kon!
Kon!